Hello and welcome to the podcast version of Directions On Point, our program that interviews a top newsmaker in geospatial technology. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief of Directions Media. The following is an interview that Adina Schutzberg, our executive editor, and I conducted with Vanessa Lawrence, Director General of the Ordnance Survey, the National Mapping Agency for Great Britain. She is the first woman to hold the post and also acts as the advisor to the British government on the short and medium range strategy for mapping and surveying. We began our conversation when I asked Ms. Lawrence about the new data licensing policies created under her guidance. Please stay tuned.
What we've recognized over the last 5 to 8 years was there would come a time when it would be appropriate for Ordnance Survey to again revolutionize its access and licensing to our customers. And we've done this in two ways. One, we've reformed our pricing and licensing regime. We used to have contracts that were very substantial in numbers of pages, and we've reduced them massively. We have internally, and I've been part of this challenge process, looked at every clause and said, why do we need that? We've also made sure that if you wish to license the data, you can. There are no barriers to licensing now. We used to say that you had to spend a certain amount with us. We don't do that now. We also used to look at very clearly the size and scope of your organization. We absolutely don't do that now. We do need some information to make sure that, just like any other organization, that we're not dealing with somebody who's illegal, but we don't need substantial information. Also, following a British government initiative, which was led by the then Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Gordon Brown, it was decided that Ordnance Survey, some of its data, would be made available effectively in the public interest. And that data can be used by anyone in the country and anyone anywhere in the world, I would like to add, to basically use, to embed in their websites, or to make a business out of. And we call that OS Open Data. And so we now have sort of two licensing models, one where the data is free to point of use to the customer, and the other where it's not free, but it is now much easier to license.
Good time to follow up on the impact of opening up that data to developers to use as they please. What has been the impact on the bottom line? That program has been open now for just over a year, if I remember right.
Well, that's hard to say at the moment. We're in the middle of quite an interesting time, I think, in locality data and the use of location data. What we're seeing is, across the world, more private sector organizations than ever before using geospatial information to make decisions. So even though we haven't published our annual report yet, when people look at it in the summer when it is published, they will find that we have seen a growth in our business, which is very, very positive. And that means there's a growth in our partner business and things like that. On the actual impact of OS Open Data, there is a piece of work that's been commissioned sort of jointly between ourselves and the British government, which is being sort of jointly led by Andrew Coote, who's a British guy, and also an organization called ASIL Tasman in Australia. I think it's ASIL Tasman. They are going to be assessing, hopefully, if there's enough evidence, whether there has been a fiscal stimulus created by OS Open Data. We've got to remember this is early days. It was announced by the government in November 2009. This might happen. 1st of April 2010, it did happen. for people to actually realign businesses and make massive changes, the chances of seeing economic stimulus quite yet, I think, is too early.
And in those ASIL-Tasman studies that came out of, I guess it was Australia, they were showing a substantial amount of return on the investment in geospatial technology. And I believe what some of the folks in the professional organizations had hoped for was that this would somehow impact legislation, at least to get geospatial organizations funded within the government better than they perhaps were. So it'll be interesting to see what turns out with your study as well.
Well, some of you might not know, Joe, but I have been basically the advisor to the Australian government on matters to do with mapping for the last sort of 5 months, and I'm just concluding my report for them. I've gone over there and worked for about a month, and interviewed many people to basically look at the aspect of their spatial data infrastructure in the whole of Australia. So people are very aware in Australia of the benefits of geospatial information. It's just about making sure they have the right kind of data.
Right.
Now, one of the other ways that the Ordnance Survey makes its living is by selling paper maps. And one of the things I found on the website was a magazine called OS Leisure, which reads very much to me like some of the publications from National Geographic and other of the outdoors magazines about getting outside, riding your bike, going hiking, and so forth. How does that fit into the mission of the Ordnance Survey, and how big is that percentage of funds that are coming in from those paper maps?
Okay, well, basically, if some of your listeners today will know the history of Ordnance Survey in the leisure mapping, that very much in the post the First World War, when people started to get Sundays available for leisure time. This was complemented. You seem to have got a gremlin on the line there, Joe. I don't think it's all right.
Yeah, I haven't heard that, so I think you're all right. Yeah.
Okay, I'll keep going. But basically, when people started to get leisure time, then people started to enjoy using Ordnance Survey paper maps. And what is an interesting phenomenon in Great Britain is that interest continues today. We still sell over 3 million maps a year, which is the whole leisure business equates to about 9% of our £120 million revenues. And we're delighted that the high street shops still support our paper mapping. But we're also acutely aware of the emerging generation that's at school and young people, that they have great interest in web resources. And so we started a magazine which is more than just about walking and using mapping. It's more about discovering Great Britain, really, and giving people excitement for that. But then what we've done is launched a new portal, actually, on the 1st of April, where people free of charge can go on and view our 25,000 and 50,000 scale mapping, which is our traditional paper mapping scales, and start to look at them and start to plot sort of routes on top of them. If they want to store those routes or they want to print them off instead of buying a paper map, then they subscribe for basically a year. At the moment, we have a special offer that's £18, so about $26 or something at the moment. Its normal subscription price is £30. And basically, you also on there get weather feeds from our meteorological office. And you can also buy other hiking devices and walking kit, all from within the portal from Ordnance Survey Leisure.
So that really does highlight sort of the the very broad mission of this business, which is very different from what goes on certainly here in the United States.
Sure. Basically, we're a one-stop shop for everything geospatial, together with our partners. And obviously, in the consumer market, our brand is incredibly well-known. We get brand recognition that is unbelievable compared to some very, very, very mainstream brands in Great Britain. People are more likely to recognize us than some of the ones that I just know in my daily life. So it's extraordinary. But right through to supplying the underlying geography to underpin all public services in Great Britain, the government chose to let us a contract where the whole of the public sector now is to use our data. And that's everything from the health service, the emergency services, local government, and central government, and will create great efficiencies because people can share all of that data. And then, of course, right into the commercial private sector. The private sector uses us as a standard, or all utilities use us in the whole of Great Britain, and certainly we're seeing all insurance and reinsurance organizations, most transport organizations use our data, and of course the whole of the construction industry uses us as well.
And so with the explosion in the mobile market, obviously the manufacturers must come to the OS to acquire their data. That certainly has got to be different, or maybe not. Maybe it's simply that you're selling licenses to the data to them, whereas here, obviously here in the States we've got NavTech, and then in Europe more TomTom. I assume it's the same relationship. Is that more or less true of how you license the data to the mobile space and the personal navigation devices?
Yeah, we basically license in two ways. We can license directly if that's what the organization prefers, or we license through, as you said, organizations like NavTech and TeleAtlas and others like that, TomTom, whatever the customer wants, really.
Right. Adina, any further questions before we move on to the audience?
Because of our limited time, I'd like to go to the audience questions.
Sure.
I'm fine with time if you need to go over, but I'll leave it with you.
Well, one of the first questions I think is very, very interesting. It comes from a member who registered with us. Is the agency prepared for INSPIRE, and how is it planning to meet the INSPIRE requirements?
Yes, very much so. Ordnance Survey has been heavily involved in INSPIRE right from the beginning, really. Obviously, this is a European initiative, and the EU has required good technical people to be on their drafting teams, and we've had three members of staff on those drafting teams since 2005, and we've also had many other people involved. The INSPIRE initiative in Great Britain is sort of administered through the UK Location Council, and that is the UK Location Council is based within our agricultural agency that's called DEFRA. And about a year ago, DEFRA asked Ordnance Survey by our minister that we would be responsible for the initial technical implementation of INSPIRE in Britain. We have been ensuring that we have built some tools which assists other organizations that need to be INSPIRE compliant, that they basically have ease of access of creating these their data into an INSPIRE compliant form. The British government decided to do it this way to drive efficiency so that they did not want each government department like the Ministry of Defence and Land Registry and others contracting their own ways of doing it. They decided to go this slightly more streamlined way, which wasn't as was originally expected, but very much was about efficiency. For Ordnance Survey itself, then our data, basically, we've been making ourselves INSPIRE compliant, And just last week, we announced that the Inspire compliant products are now available via OS On Demand on our web mapping service, basically, for professional users of our data. And we also released a range of product metadata for use by others and the public and other public bodies, which is available on data.gov.uk. So, you know, our work in this area is progressing very well.
Okay. Another question comes in. Your advice for making government spatial data available? It's kind of a broad question, but I think they're perhaps getting at the overall availability of data and perhaps what that means for the broad spectrum of users.
Well, I think many of your listeners will be aware that the British government has a major push to make data from the British government very much more accessible than ever before. And in fact, a minister from the Cabinet Office, that's like a central office in government today, the Right Honourable Francis Maude, he made a speech on that, and so did our Chancellor, George Osborne. So, you know, there's very much the highest level of interest in making more government spatial data available. Obviously, as everybody knows, there are sort of two types of data that comes from government. There's data that's a byproduct of what government does. Like a good example might be, say, soils information that will be collected by our agriculture department to make business decisions for agriculture. That's a byproduct. And then there's organizations like Ordnance Survey, where we only have one job to do, and that's to create and maintain the master map of Great Britain for the benefit to the nation, basically. And so in the latter organization, i.e. an Ordnance Survey type organization, it's vitally important that there is sufficient investment in order to continue with the quality and sustainability of the data. And so there is tension about making sure that there's sufficient funding for adequate quality to be maintained, because if you just left it to the market in Great Britain, the market for mapping, for large-scale mapping, that's where every building is on the landscape and every detail and every feature, then there's about 27% of British geography, that's within England, Scotland, Wales, that's profitable to map. The rest is unprofitable to map. Everybody wants to map the cities, and people want to buy the cities. But then when it comes to leisure mapping, of course, the city geography, and this is a smaller scale mapping, is absolutely not what people want. They want the leisure areas such as the Lake District and the Peak District, etc. But everybody wants his universal coverage to the same quality, and they want it to be maintained because they need it for the delivery of an emergency vehicle, for getting planning permission, or just simple things like making sure that their street lamps can be maintained in a rural area. And at the same time in leisure, the leisure scales are also used by the emergency services for when, very sadly, there's an incident, perhaps a kidnap or some terrible problem, then they will issue, as many people know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 maps to the general public who go and seek and look for perhaps a young child that's gone missing. So what we need is always to have a model for organizations like Ordnance Survey that allows it to be sustainable and to be able to update the data to the quality and accessibility that people want. And hence, you know, we're pleased with how OS Open Data has worked out. We effectively have a model where some is free and some is paid for, and it works very well. Of course, it's only the free data is only free to the end user. It's well known that the British government came to a suitable commercial settlement with Ordnance Survey in order to pay for that data.
Great. I'm going to ask one of the audience members who has submitted a question online to ask their question directly if they have a microphone. This would be from Paul Okonkwo. Paul, if you're there, can you ask your question directly? Okay, perhaps he doesn't have a speaker. His question is, the new government initiative in promoting geospatial data sharing with internal and external customers, would this have a negative impact on revenue to your department?
No. Basically, this is another contract that Ordnance Survey has been has negotiated with the British government called the Public Sector Mapping Agreement. And within the financial settlement, it allows for the sharing of data between other public bodies and also the contractors to those bodies. So let's say one is undertaking a piece of research for the Department for Transport, perhaps on noise pollution or something. You are the you're the private sector contractor, then you will be able to use Ordnance Survey data. And of course, the key thing about the Public Sector Mapping Agreement is, like all of our customers, they will receive the most up-to-date data that we have collected on any area. And for some of those public sector customers, they have daily update. So if we make a change, then they have the change overnight.
I have a question here also from an audience member, Addy Pope. Addy, are you there? Okay, I'm going to ask that directly then. The question is, you have spoken about commercial and public sectors. How is the OS supporting the academic community?
That's a very good question. We're doing a lot, actually. I'm incredibly passionate about making sure that students of every age can have access to our data. So I'm going to start, if I may, at the age of five, which might surprise some of your listeners. We have now launched a system which has been available for about 2.5 months called DigiMap for Schools. And it is free this year, well, for about 15 months, to every school in Great Britain if you were already subscribing to our free maps, and they were completely free, even the postage was free, our Free Maps for Schools initiative, which we've been running since 2002, which has supplied over 6 million maps to over 6 million children. And they were paper maps, and every 11-year-old in Great Britain was eligible for a paper map, and I'm delighted that so many decided to accept the paper map, and they used it often in up to 5 subjects within school, but they also got to keep them, and the school got about 30% more maps than there were children, so the school also got a good library collection. But we recognize that school children really, really want digital data now, and it wasn't just 11-year-olds who wanted to use the data, and it also, people wanted to use every geography of Great Britain, not just the geography around the schools. So we designed this system that is free for 15 months and then goes to paid for, but the maximum price it's ever going to be, I believe, is about £40, so that's about $60 per school. It's just covering the costs of the basically the hosting costs. And this allows them, every school, to have access to everything from master map to 25,000, 50,000, and many of our other scale data for use within classrooms and use also for homework. So then we come on to universities, and we've had basically a system for all university students available for maybe 6-7 years, and that now has also migrated to having MasterMap within it. And both of these systems are run out of the excellent computing facility at the University of Edinburgh, which I have to commend the way they handle our data and also the way they handle customers, both in higher education, research, and further education colleges, and also in schools.
Great. I want to take maybe one or two more questions. We have another audience question. Where does the OS see emerging enterprise demand for geospatial data?
Okay. Interestingly, emerging areas seem to be in the banking and finance world. People are beginning to realize that the importance within those institutions of using up-to-date accurate geography. We're also seeing it in the insurance industry. Then we're also seeing it in real-world gaming and many of the newer industries. But it's constantly amazing me, the number of people who come to me with really innovative ideas, and it's just delightful to see that something that is so vital to have in a part of the base infrastructure of a country, I believe, having accurate, definitive spatial information that's comprehensive, is being used in so many different areas.
And perhaps one final question that we have here. How do you see the role of 3D modeling versus traditional 2D GIS?
I think 3D has got a great future. We've been experimenting with it for some time, and obviously there's true 3D, and then there's just lofting of buildings effectively. And we're looking at what exactly do customers want. Interestingly, I'm fortunate enough to work a lot in the Middle East, and we're seeing a lot of people in the Middle East truly using 3D GIS. Obviously, there's a lot of people using BIM models, and we're interested in that. But what so far we've not found here in Great Britain, there's a lot of interest in it, but there's nobody who really says, I've got to have that, and I'm going to pay for it. And so even though it sounds like, that one should be saying, okay, master map will go 3D. At the moment, finding the market demand who's going to pay for that extra work, that extra dimension, its cost base, is hard to identify. Lots of people, believe there are bigger things for us to invest in before we invest wholeheartedly into 3D. However, that will not stop us from using 3D and creating 3D when appropriate. And a place where it's very appropriate is, for instance, for the Olympics next year, which Ordnance Survey is providing all the geospatial data to all the nations that require it in order to make sure we keep everybody safe.
And I imagine you're doing quite a bit of work in supplying data to the security agencies for that event.
Basically, we do our job that we always do. We provide the necessary resources to underpin Great Britain. And, that's just the normal job. It has been for many, 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 many years. And so when there's a big event like our fabulous royal wedding we held recently, then, of course, Ordnance Survey, we were making sure that the right people had the most up-to-date resources. And, in fact, we had some imagery of the exact routing for the royal wedding, and it was less than a week old. And, of course, we made sure that the right people had it.
Vanessa, thanks so much for your time. We've kind of run past our allotted time, I know, but we really very appreciate your insights and spending time addressing our questions from our audience.
Well, it's a pleasure and an honor to basically speak to you, Joe, and I very much wish you well.
Thanks very much. And thanks to all of you, our viewers. We'll see you on another Directions On Point and our Directions Media webinar, and hopefully you're subscribers to our weekly Directions on the News podcast, and that is syndicated on iTunes. And as I mentioned before, this is going to be recorded, and you certainly can watch again on demand. Again, thanks for joining us today on Directions On Point, and be sure to tell a friend. Take care, and bye for now.